Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. We're again talking about the Kingdom of God. We're in session 5 of Fathers. The Roman civilization had a way of taking the father's right to their children away from them, not by the sword, but by offering them benefits, by offering them protection, which is a benefit, protection against devastation, as well as sometimes exemption from certain taxes because you were raising up Roman children. But that was not alone. That process was not done as an isolated process. The enfranchisement of the Roman citizen from these Roman, which means whole people. It's actually a Greek word that means whole and possession of their rights. They were really almost an anarchy when they threw out the Tarquinian kings. They were a republic, but when they elected a senator, the senator did not really at first have any power to make almost any law whatsoever. There was some laws that they can control, but it was very small amount of power. Much like the United States. When the individual states were republics, they gathered together and they took some of their power and vested it in the United States federal government, which was this other entity. And it was controlled by two sets of authority through Congress and the Electoral College. They also elected an executive, but Congress was composed of both senators and individual legislatures. The senators were sent by the state, elected by the local state congresses, etc., to represent the state government, and the congressmen were sent to represent the people. Now, that's altered over time. And that's not the way it is now, but originally that was the idea. And they had power to make laws concerning some things, but the real power that they obtained over the following years for Rome and for the United States and for many countries, because history repeats itself, came when the people looked to the government for more and more benefits. And Rome was around for about 500 years before the first emperor showed up, which was Augustus Caesar, who was Octavius and became Augustus Caesar, Apotheos Principas Civitas and Imperator of Rome. And that came about after a civil war where there were a great many changes in the government and the republic really no longer existed. The empire grew up in the midst of the republic, but the republic was all but dead at the rise of the first emperor. But the total power in the imperial seat and Rome was going to grow over the years. Augustus had a tremendous amount of money after he destroyed and devastated those people in the civil war that opposed this imperial power and wanted to return to the republic. But he confiscated all their property, all their wealth, and all this stuff. And so he actually started a process of financing through the state, mostly with this money that he had taken from others, you know, by conquering them, of subsidizing the existing welfare system run through the temples of Rome. Romans were very charitable people, very philanthropic. They would go into communities where there was almost, you know, the most primitive of cultures, and they would come in and they would build harbors, they would build roads, they would build aqueducts, and they would start to trade, they would build mines, and they would raise the standard of living in Gaul, in Hispaniola, and which was not called Spain at the time, but in these different harbors around the Mediterranean, even as far as Great Britain. And occasionally they met hostilities and they would fight, but the reality was they were in business. They were in business to make money for Rome. And they had tremendous engineering abilities. And they were just like welcomed with open arms in places like Israel. They didn't conquer Israel. They were invited in there because Israel was having its own civil war and they were settling that civil war because they were invited in by one of the opponents you know, one of the sides of that civil war. They ended up siding with the other side once Pompey came and examined the actual laws, the local laws. But the side that they sided with, Hyrcanus, wouldn't apply for their aid, but the Pharisees did. And so they ended up having a military presence there. They didn't really have a lawful military presence there because the one who was the real king did not invite them in, but because the Pharisees invited them. So they kept kind of a low profile. What they were actually doing was financing commercial enterprises. Like I said, harbors, they would build whole towns, aqueducts, roads, trade routes. This was their interest, make some money. And as a matter of fact, Pontius Pilate was the chief financial officer. They talk about governor. He wasn't governing Judea. He was governing Roman interests in Judea. The problem was Roman interests in Judea grew and grew and grew because they were very industrious people. I mean, Judea was pretty backwater. I mean, they didn't even have the temple or any of these things. Herod built the temple, and, you know, there was a lot of political intrigue. They had just had their own civil war. Before that, they had the Hasmoneans for years, who were bringing in all kinds of damnable heresies, so to speak, in the construction and structure of society, and that weakened society more and more. And that was one of the conflicts between Aristobulus and Hyrcanus, and Pompey, and the general he sent there first, was that they saw in the law that the Hasmoneans were in violation of some of the basic fundamental laws of Judea that came down to them from Moses. And Pompey was actually righter on Aristobulus. But that's another whole matter. But the point was, is that this power grew and altered the relationship of the people with their government. And nothing altered it more than Herod's idea of a social welfare system, much like that, that was already introduced into the Roman society and Roman government by men like Augustus Caesar. And that and it didn't just start with Augustus Caesar. The elements of it was around a long time before, even back in the days of the proconsuls. But it was this idea of registering with the government and becoming entitled to benefits and protections of the government other than just the protection against, you know, foreign invasion, which was originally what the emperor was supposed to do, is to protect Roman interests abroad and protect from foreign invasion. He was never to bring his troops into Rome. And of course, Caesar, that's what he did. He crossed the Rubicon and brought those troops in. Now, Tiberius was even more clever. He created police forces, even secret services, that were operating throughout the Roman proper and built up the Praetorian Guard that was to protect him. And in doing so, they were creating a military force right in the midst of the people that was going to enforce law other than the civil law, actually dictates and executive orders from the Principas Civitas, who was the president of Rome, who was often the same guy as the emperor. These men were elected to office, and by the structure of their society and the systems of those governments and the participation of the people, they altered the nature of society. And it eventually led to a weakened Rome. And one of the ways they did this, there's only so much power in the world. Fundamental rights are originally given to individuals. But then those individuals begin to vest those rights and choices into the hands of central authorities, thinking that they are going to be free from their responsibilities and the burdens of self-government, and they actually go under power and authority of others until they become subject people. So anyway, when the Romans, as well as the civilizations that came before and after, knew that this law of the family, which is where all law begins, because that's where society begins, was so important that it could not be terminated lightly. The matter was so serious, the fundamental aspects to society, that fathers were aware that they needed to stipulate a clause of re-emancipation from a patron, and they called that pactum fiduciae, an agreement or trust, that when they entered into these agreements for protection, that they could also leave. They could get out. They could, like, expatriate, maybe you could call it, because these leaders were called patrons, substitute fathers, conscripted fathers. The problem was debt. Once they were operating in debt, they could not just leave. We talked earlier in this series about the Civil War. The states of the South could actually pull out of the federal government. They could say, we want to be separate. We don't want to be a part of you anymore. But they could not take federal property. They could not fire on federal forts. They could not confiscate federal gold. They could not refuse to pay debts to Northerners by saying we're only going to pay with our scrip. They had to actually pay in gold and silver, and they felt like they couldn't afford that. But had they done that, there wouldn't have been the violent Civil War. But, you know, this is the course that we take. Now, I've heard recently a lot of talks about states, you know, separating from the United States now, you know, actually becoming independent, you know. I don't know if there's actual state sovereignty movement or whatever. That's insane. Is it because debt is pervasive? Not only the states in debt, but the people within the states are in debt. And the people within the states are not state citizens. They're federal citizens and residents in their states, and they're in debt. They're all pledged in debt. They're surety for debt. Now, the Bible talks about being a surety for debt, warns you against it. Woe unto those who strike hands and become a surety for debt. But that's already taken place. I'm not warning you against it. I'm telling you, you've already done it. And you've made the state your father and the father of your children. So when you see the state seizing children, they have every right to do it. Now, they may be wrong in doing it. They may be unjust in doing it. They may be not nice in doing it. But they have every right to do it because you gave them that right because you were slothful in the ways of God. And the Bible tells us the slothful should be under tribute. You should be, and your children are under that tribute. And your children have to work for the state. And if it looks like you're going to argue with the state about its choices, the bureaucratic choices that it makes, they will come down on you with both feet. Because that's a beast system. They go about devouring who they will. You already belong to them. Is it not lawful for them to do with their own what they will? That's the Bible. Is it not lawful for me to do with mine own what I will? They own you. You're surety for debt. You're not those Americans back in 1776. Back then, most people were educating their children themselves. They were paying that bill themselves. They were taking care of the widows and orphans themselves. They were defending their homeland themselves. When the government came to take away their power to defend themselves by confiscating the firearms in Lexington and Concord, the people said, no, we're going to maintain these rights we've already been exercising. The fact is, today, Americans don't exercise those rights. Those rights have and responsibilities that are correlative to them have been in the hands of the government for almost a century. You don't call on your neighbor. In many subdivisions, you hardly even know who your neighbor is. You don't even know who lives three houses down. Some neighborhoods you might know that, but most neighborhoods you don't. And if they're sick, you tell them to go to the government. Even in your churches, somebody's sick, somebody needs help, oh, go to the government. You can get a check here, and you get a check there, and you can get Medicaid and Medicare. So who's in charge? Not you. Nobody's usurping your rights. You're neglecting your responsibilities. So anyway, the next part of this article that we have on Call No Man Father is Accept No Substitute. And we start off with the substituting of God's plan and family for the plans and will of men corrupts the natural benefits of the family structure and seduces the individual into an unnatural state or status. Those who are observant see the appalling increase in the infringement and termination of parental rights by modern courts. Where did the court's power to do this come from? Children take their first step of emancipation from the manu of their family, the potestas of their family and their father, when he grants that power through novation, what they call novation in ancient Rome, which is the remodeling of an old obligation. So your obligation, originally the word pious meant your obligation to your father. When the state became your father, you had a new obligation to the state. And you established that you're on that road with certification of birth. But now a lot of people are saying, well, I'm saying don't go out and get your children birth certificates. I'm not saying that. I'm talking about repenting. The key element here is the individual responsibility. Just going out and not getting your children birth certificates, which the early Christians refused to do, and were persecuted for it under Marcus Aurelius, because it was mandatory under Marcus Aurelius. But those Christians were already taking care of the daily ministration of their society. You had already seen, years before, a letter given to the tutor of Marcus Aurelius, who became emperor for a while, Antoninus Pius. He received a letter from Justin explaining how Christianity worked. Those that had shared with those that did not have enough. They took care of one another through faith, hope, and charity. They met every week. This is what they did in church. They didn't go to church to feel good. They went to church to learn, to help, to serve one another, and those that had shared with those that didn't have enough. Because when you go to church, that's your welfare system. That's your FEMA. That's what they were doing. You're not doing that. And he told them what they were doing and suffered for it, because they were, at times they were persecuting people. But he explained it, and you should know it. You think that, no, it's okay to go to the men who call themselves benefactors. When you go to church, those that have don't share with those that don't have enough. You just give them the list of numbers to call at the benefactors who exercise authority. How can you be so far off? Now, how does the system of God really work if the family was still in possession of its potestas, its imperium, its power to decide that was given it by God? Well, how would it work? Well, you would be told in Exodus, like you are told in Exodus 20 and 12, as well as in the New Testament, honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord has, God has given thee. Well, honor means to fatten. It actually comes from a word that means to fatten in the original Hebrew. And so you would be tithing to your fathers, even when you're adults. When you're young, you'll work for your dad. But when you get older, you would be tithing to your father, and your father would be seeing to the investment of that to take care of you in your time of need. It would be strengthening the family. You would be looking more and more to the family. You want to go to college? You don't go get a student loan from your father in Washington. You go get a student loan from your father on earth. And you know, I've seen boat people do this all the time. Now they all go to, you know, back in the days when Vietnam and the boat people came ashore and all this stuff, and Malaysia boat people, they would come as a family, and they'd be putting their kids through college. Their kids would get good jobs, and their kids would be coming back and putting their younger brothers and sisters through college and getting good jobs. Or they might not even go to college. They might just start businesses, and they would finance those businesses until they were very successful. And they would make each member of their family more and more successful. Well, this is what the early Christians were doing. But they were doing one more thing, because they were doing it within the church. Our job is to return every man to his possessions and to his family. And the family's job is to love one another, not only within the family, but the next family. And so when you go to church, it's not about feeling good. You can sing a few songs and you can listen to a preacher a little bit. But if he isn't telling you how to become a successful society without going to men who call themselves benefactors, without eating at the table of kings and rulers, if he isn't teaching you how to put a knife to your throat if you're a man of appetite and how to provide those benefits through faith, hope, and charity, if he's not teaching you that, he's not teaching you about the real Jesus Christ. He's not teaching you the way. And if you're not, now that you've heard about the way, if you're not gathering together to implement that way, you're not a real Christian, because you're not really following Christ. You're just talking about Him. You're just saying, Lord, Lord. You're not actually doing the will of the Father. So anyway, you honor your father. Now, one of the things that your father would be doing would be tithing to altars of stone, to the church, to living stones. Now, what would they be doing with those funds? Well, they would be helping out those in need, those that didn't have enough. This is what they go to church. Those that had shared with those that didn't have enough through the church. Now, you could do it on your own, but chances are now, because you're in a system of social welfare that has you in the bondage of Egypt, if you were to give, you know, $200 a month, or maybe $200 a week, I don't know what you can afford, but if you gave $200 a week to other members of your congregation because they needed help, you can't deduct that from what you owe Caesar. You have to pay a tax on it. So you won't have $200, because you have $200 to spend, but you're going to have to pay taxes on that $200. So you're going to have to pay 10, 20, 30, maybe half of it, you might, depending on what tax bracket you're in, to the government. And then you're only going to have $100 to give to the needy in your congregation. But if you give the whole $200 to the church, then you get to provide $200 of aid to your neighbor. Now, your minister is going to take out some of that, because he has to take some time in taking care. You know, maybe he's going to take time out from what he would normally do to drive over there. So he's got to pay for his gas and all those kinds of things out of the $200. But still, what you're doing is creating a circulatory system within your community to help out the needy. You're also, when you give that, you don't wrap, you know, a band around it saying, this is from me, and create a personal obligation between that individual in need and you. But when it comes from the minister, it comes from the whole congregation. He doesn't know whether you gave $100 or $10 or nothing. And he could probably find out in the records of the church, but it just came from the church. And the benefactor, the church, doesn't exercise authority, so he knows that minister doesn't get all the credit either, because the minister has nothing to give away except what you have given him. So now, what you're doing, not only is the family learning to take care of one another, and sons are growing up and daughters are growing up knowing that I've got to help my siblings, and they're creating bonds of help amongst each other, and trust and gratitude towards each other, and cementing the family. But because you're doing this other thing through the family of the congregation, you're creating those same bonds with this cell group of 10 families that has gathered together. Now, that congregation helps out other congregations, and that same love flows out that way in a bigger circle, in a bigger circle, into a wider network. That's kingdom thinking. Just to keep it within your congregation, where your minister is gathering little chicks to his congregation and wanting everybody to tithe to him, but he's not a part of other congregations, that's congregationalism. It's also isolationism. It's not kingdom thinking. Kingdom thinking was this union and discipline based on faith, hope, and charity, and the perfect law of liberty that spread all over the Roman Empire. And it was recognizable, because the ministers got together and they knew who was doing what and who wasn't doing what, and they created these bonds in society, these invisible bonds. They weren't all wearing some sort of patchwork or special clothes or any of that stuff. They weren't necessarily recognizable, which was very handy when that real persecution came. Now, most of the Christians who think they're going to be persecuted, they're actually going to do some of the persecuting, but that's another story. We'll talk more about this when we come back to Keys of the Kingdom. We're going to talk about Kabod when we come back.
My name is Mark and I'm from Melbourne in Australia, and I'm a minister in the church established by Jesus Christ more than 2,000 years ago. After reading the books published at hisholychurch.org, I realised that mainstream Christianity had taken a wrong turn by forgetting what Jesus said to do, to practice pure religion while remaining unspotted from the world. What does this mean and how is this done exactly? You'll find out when you go to hisholychurch.org and discover what it truly means to love God and your neighbour as much as yourself. Join the Living Network at hisholychurch.org.
Have you ever looked at the things happening in the world today and felt that something just wasn't right, but couldn't put your finger on it? Have you ever heard the phrase, "God bless America," and wondered to yourself, does he really? Or have you ever looked at the government's policies on things such as abortion or same-sex marriage and asked yourself, how could they? Or where are all the Christians voicing their outrage? These are hard questions that many people today ask themselves. But along with those hard questions come some very hard answers. Answers that you may never heard before, but nonetheless will answer these and other questions you may have. So if you're looking for answers, join us at hisholychurch.org. It's not what you might think, and it will open the heart and mind to a whole other world that you never even knew existed. It did for me and many others. I know it will for you as well. So join us as we seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness at hisholychurch.org.
The Creator is the God of the living, not the God of the dead. His kingdom was, is, and will be forever on earth as it is in heaven. Start by connecting and finding other kingdom-seeking families on the His Holy Church Living Network. Visit www.hisholychurch.org to start your journey back to your unalienable birthright.
I'm Brother Justice, and I'm a minister of His Holy Church of Sacramento, California. His Holy Church is a powerful weapon in the hands of God. The books, The Covenants of the Gods, and Thy Kingdom Come has changed the course of my life forever. For those of you who are truly looking for the way, I encourage you to look to His Holy Church at www.hisholychurch.org. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and I said we were going to talk about Kabod, and I'm actually not saying it right. I have to actually spit almost to say it, but it's a word, kush biet delet, in the Hebrew, and that's that word that you see as honor, and the honor of thy father and thy mother, and we mentioned a little bit about that. The first time the word is used in the Bible was in reference to Abraham, and is translated rich. Abraham was already expatriated from his father, Terah, who was ruling in a city-state called Haran, named after Abraham's own brother and Terah's son, because Haran had been literally put to death under the fathers of Ur that were codifying law and ruling over, because the people of Ur were eating at the table of their king, and therefore he was their patronus, and therefore he was making laws and ruling with power over their life and death. And Terah picked up his family and left and started this other city-state called Haran. But anyway, and Abraham was very rich in cattle, in silver, and in gold. That's the word there. He was very honored and he was very fat, enriched in that. We often imagine that the word honor refers to merely turning off the TV or going to bed on time. Honor thy father and mother, do what they say. Taking out the garbage, etc. But that's not really what it is. It has to do with an obligation of care and support of your family. If we see excise, or what they call tribute, in its origins, is a patrimonial right of emperors and kings. Now that's a legal maxim of law explaining what an excise tax is. It's originally the right of a father to be fattened by his children. So if you have to pay an excise tax, that's clear evidence that the ones you're paying it to are your fathers, the fathers of the earth, that Jesus was saying we were to call no man fathers of the earth. Tribute is defined, quote, a sum of money paid by an inferior sovereign or state to a superior potentate to secure the friendship or protection of the latter. Now, your tithing, your free will offering, your tithing, back in the days of the Levites as well as in the early church, was your offering to the potentate of Christ, the king. Christ as king, Christ meaning the anointed. Christ was the anointed king. There is another king, one Jesus. And when you gave at church, that was your tribute to God. It was managed by the men you could choose who to give to. They couldn't enforce this. If you couldn't pay the full amount, they can't beat you. They can't throw you in jail. They can't throw you in debtor's prison. You only have to pay what you can afford to pay. How much can you pay? Okay, can you pay this much? Because it's a free will offering. Because anything short of a free will offering makes the word of God to none effect. It's not a free will offering. The subject of Patronus is this vast and interesting subject as a contributing source to understanding the origins of tithes and taxes. We can see another quote, Patronus, comma, Roman civil law. This word is a modification of the Latin word pater, father, a denomination applied by Romulus to the first senators of Rome, and which they always afterwards bore. Romulus at first appointed 100 of them. 100 senators. Ah, that's a coincidence. 100 senators in Rome. And they were appointed. And they weren't just picked out of a hat. But they didn't have the same power. The government of Rome changed over those first 500 years from when they threw out the Tarquinian kings and they became a republic and then gradually morphed into what became an imperial state, a totalitarian dictatorship, and a destructive, self-destructive regime that opposed Christianity because it was, as Edward Gibbon says, a viable republic in the heart of the Roman Empire. That's what Christianity was called by that particular historian who wrote his Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire back in 1770s. The reality was is that governments changed because men changed their relationships with that government. And when they do that, they also change their relationship with God. And Christ was a social reformer. Buddha is declared a social reformer by many historians. These are social reformers saying that society should relate to one another in another way, a different way. And that way is based on faith, hope, and charity and the perfect law of liberty, or it's based on force, fear, and compliance and coveting your neighbor's goods through the agency and power of men who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority. That is the distinction between Christianity and the rest of the world. That is the distinction between Christ and the Pharisees, who are making the Word of God to none effect by their system of social welfare. He who is in the womb is considered as born whenever his benefit is concerned. And in our book on the Call No Man Father, we go through what is called the Shepherdtown Maternity Act, was for the promotion of the welfare and hygiene of maternity and infancy and for other purposes. Now, whenever they say for other purposes, they mean for other purposes. And this was back in 1921. Senate passed this with a vote of 63-7. And it's part of that benefactor spreading benefits amongst the people. The greatest destroyers of liberty are those who spread amongst them gifts, gratuities, and benefits. And they were starting to do this. And they did this with a surplus. And if you go back to the days not too long before that, Davy Crockett and men like that, arguing that the government is not and cannot be in the charity business. But here they imagine that they are, and they're going to spread amongst you this benefit. And by a House vote of 279-39, so this is overwhelming idea to do this. And this was finally signed by the president and became law on November 23rd, 1921. Act provided for the current fiscal year of 1922, $10,000 for each state accepting the provisions of the act and an additional sum of $1 million. To do what? To provide these benefits. But the states had a choice. They had a choice then. Just like you have choices and had choices and your father had choices. And the choices you make make a difference. The bill was a direct outgrowth of a 9-year study made by the Federal Children's Bureau. Note that the Bureau doesn't say the Federal Bureau for Children, but the Federal Children's Bureau. And the United States Birth Registration Area was created by this act. And that study actually was dealing with Indian reservations. Now, remember when Lewis and Clark were going across for the first time and meeting a lot of these Indian tribes sent there by the President of the United States? They gave away gifts when they were on this trip. And they would say that this gift, this maybe a silver medallion or whatever it was a gift from the Great White Father. They thought of the savages or the native people as children that needed to be cared for. Nothing destroyed the Indians more than reservation life. And now everybody seems to be on the reservation. Everybody seems to be getting the benefits of benefactors who exercise authority. And it's accepted as okay, even though Christ spoke vehemently against it. The Corbin of the Pharisees was based on men who called themselves benefactors, but exercised authority, compelling the contributions of the people to take care of the needy of their society, to provide for the daily ministration, the distribution of bread amongst the truly needy of the society. If you got the baptism of Christ, you were kicked out of that system. Did the federal government have the right to impose such legislation on the state? No, and that's why they gave them the choice. In 1923, it was argued by Mr. Alexander Lincoln, Assistant Attorney General of Massachusetts, that the act is unconstitutional. It purports to vest in agencies of the federal government powers which are almost wholly undefined in matters relating to maternity and infancy, and to authorize appropriations of federal funds for the purposes of the act. I'm quoting right out of the case. And what Mr. Alexander Lincoln was, as the Assistant Attorney General of Massachusetts, was arguing. The complaint went on to the state. The act is invalid because it assumes powers not granted to Congress and usurps the local police powers. The act is not made valid by the circumstances that federal powers are to be exercised only with respect to those states which accept the act, for Congress cannot assume, and state legislatures cannot yield the powers reserved to the states by the Constitution. The act is invalid because it imposes on each state an illegal option, either to yield a part of its powers reserved by the 10th Amendment, or to give up its share of appropriations under the act. You see what I'm saying? It was literally like bribing them. Give up part of your power. Allow the federal government to create the federal birth registration area, or you can't have this money. That is appropriations from the federal government. The argument makes some sense, but let's go back to that Civil War situation that we talked about before. In the Civil War, the states could leave the Union, but they could not take federal property. You have to realize that the monies that go to the federal government are the federal government's monies to spend as they see fit. That is your contribution. Disregard the fact that your contribution is compelled under law. It is still your contribution. It's your contribution as a member. And the way their system works is if you are a member, you have to pay in. So anyway, in the final analysis, the act was an offer from one corporate entity, the United States, to others for the purposes of providing an avenue for individual citizens of America to register as a subject of the state, therefore a citizen of the federal corporate state, and the superior sovereign agent called the United States. The federal government would assume the position of patron as the natural fathers emancipated their children from God's institution, the family, into the hands of a man-made institution, and the substitute fathers, the patri of the Senate and Congress. They are the new vicarious patri, the new substitute fathers, and they get to make rules of parents patria. At that time, obey the father. Now, other things have also gone on. You have to watch the chronology of events in history, because those fathers have relinquished rights and authorities through debt and through treaty. And if we go back to what we talked about in one of the earlier shows about, you know, trying to get parental rights back by barring the federal government's right to make treaties concerning their property, their assets, the surety of debt. The surety of debt was at one time federal lands. Now the surety of debt is federal living lands, the Adama of the earth. You are back in the bondage of Egypt. Now, I don't want you to get angry about that. I want you to understand it. Don't curse the light or the darkness. Seek the light. Seek the truth. Seek the understanding. There is a solution. You know, I've kind of beat everybody up for the first few shows here on this topic, but the reality is that many of you have simply been swept away in a current of thinking that's contrary to the ways of Christ. You've been taught things that aren't true. They have been ingrained into you for generations now, and now you're beginning to wake up. What do you do? How do you turn around? I don't want you to fight the current. I want you to seek the rock. You got to swim for the rock. you gotta get out of the current. Get into the low ebbs. Get out of that main current. You know, seek to get out of debt. Seek to not depend upon the benefactors who exercise authority. The only way to do this is to come together and form altars of clay and altars of stone. Living stone. You're the clay. The living stones are those men who manifest the character of Christ in service and in love and in sacrifice. And you have to find them. I can't tell you where they all are. We have some in the Living Network and some that are striving, seeking, and you need to decide whether or not you want to support that. Or you can bury your talent in the ground and see where that gets you. You need to turn around. You know, if you look in United States Code, Title 15, Section 15, applicability of parens patria, the Latin words, parens patria, actions and statutes, Section 15C, 15D, 15E, 15F, 15G of this title shall apply in any state unless such state provides by law for its non-applicability in such a state. And guess what? Not happening. You are bound. And this is why they can take Justine away from her parents. Now, you can cry out about it, it's unjust and everything, but if you want God to hear your cries, you know, they may fall on deaf ears, and they seem to be falling on deaf ears in the state, but they certainly are falling on deaf ears in Massachusetts. Some of the Connecticut people, the governor of Connecticut should be filing a writ against the governor of Massachusetts saying, we want our resident back. You have kidnapped this child and taken her over state lines. Send her back to Connecticut. And Connecticut at this stage would probably return her to her parents. But your ministers are weak. Even your administrators are weak. Your church ministers are almost doing nothing. And they'll shake their fist about this particular event, but what about the hundreds and thousands of other events that have taken place over the last 20 years that I've seen, and they've done nothing about? You see, you've waited too long, but it's not too late today. I don't know about tomorrow, maybe too late, but today is not too late. You're not going to change the course of human events, but you can change your course. You can repent and turn around and see that the problem is not the state. The problem is you and the way you relate to it and the way you relate to your neighbors and the way you relate to your church. You're not coming together with the same spirit that Christ taught and the early church did. When they got the baptism of Jesus Christ, they weren't going to get welfare from the temple of Herod anymore. They were going to be cast out. Remember the blind guy and his parents say, well, if we profess Christ, you know, we'll be cut off. They didn't want that. They were old. And the blind man had no skills, no way of making a living. He wasn't going to be able to feed at the temple anymore if they cast him out. But he said, you know, I have to profess Christ because he's the one who gave me sight. Didn't know what he looked like, but he had to profess him. And Christ came back and he said, who do you profess? And he said, and Christ took him in. Into what? Into the kingdom of God. He was the king of a kingdom of living souls. It's not about the dirt under your feet. Christ owns that too. But if he doesn't own the soul of your heart, it doesn't matter where you put the sole of your shoe. You have to repent. You have to turn around. You have to go the other way. You won't be able to go there alone. But see, you've been caught up in the current of the anti-spirit of Christ, going the wrong way. This is why they can't see it. They read right in there, weightier matters, miss it. Read right in there, not to be like the men who call themselves benefactors, exercise authority, miss it. If you sit and eat with a ruler, put a knife to your throat. The ways of the one purse runs towards death. You know, that through covetousness they will make merchandise of you. And through covetous practices you will curse your children in debt. Now, they tell you all this stuff, but they miss it, they miss it, they miss it. Because they're swept away in a current of self-righteousness. You need humility to raise your head above the self-righteous current. And you need that humility to see the rock of the ways of Christ. And you need to start swimming in that direction. And it will take you out of that current. And it will, now, when you have the slightest opportunity to give in a righteous way, to take care of one another in a righteous way, to gather together in an assembly based on real love for one another and righteousness of God, you will start a new current that goes the other way. It literally will part the sea that would have drowned you, the river that would have drowned you. And it will make dry land where there was none. Because you have a new breath, a new power and a spirit. And we'll talk about this and how that quantum works eventually. Maybe not in this series, but maybe in the series on sacred purpose trust, which is what Christ gave us. He entrusted us to feed his sheep, to take care of one another. Without the exercise of rugged individualism that comes from an independent, self-reliant family, the people are brought down to a weakened state of apathy and self-indulgence. Society in every state is a blessing. But a government, even in its best state, is but a necessary evil. In its worst state, an intolerable one. Who said that? It was Thomas Paine. It's one of your American forefathers. Rome had a vast system of welfare. Those who registered with Rome and its increasing socialist state were eligible for free bread regularly. Rome imported some 500,000 bushels of grain each year from Egypt alone. There was a great deal of free entertainment provided and general promise of social security to those who chose to be a part of the offered system of Corbin. The United States government is simply carrying on the Roman tradition, not only with its buildings and with the structure of its government, because the emperors were elected by an electoral college. The president of Rome was elected annually by an electoral college, and the same is true of the apotheos, who appointed all the judges. That's why Washington is called the apotheos of the United States, because he appointed the judges throughout the federal government. All the presidents do that. That's why the painting at the top of the Capitol building is called the apotheos of Washington, which on the government's U.S. government website, it says, raises Washington to the rank of God. It tells you that right on the U.S. government website. Painted by Constantine Bermudi, who was sent here by the Pope to paint the Capitol Dome. This is all right in front of you, and you don't pay attention to it. Now, you get all conspiracy theory nut kind of on the deal, but that doesn't change anything. The only thing that changes anything is if you change your direction. Start coming together. Don't be mad at the system. Be friends with the system. But seek the righteous ways of Christ. This is what the church is supposed to be providing. The parents have likely already asked permission of the government to marry by subjecting the products of their marriage to the state. Go read Holy Matrimony versus Marriage. They've already waived the right to a portion of their labor. They're already sacrificing on the civil altars of the state, much like the people did under Herod and under Augustus Caesar and Tiberius and Caligula. Parents entering into the hospital, signing and granting permission to the corporate entity of the hospital and the licensed professionals there, saying, we need your help. Now, don't even have to sign birth certificates. The hospital can do all that for you. They've got custody. This is how they lost custody of Justina. They took her into the doors of the hospital, and the hospital is an agency of the state. They're so surprised that that hospital in Boston works so closely with the state. Well, they're entities of the same creation that you created. They're part of the same system. And you're surprised, and it's a system that operates by control and force. And you're surprised when they exercise that. Why are you surprised? Anyway, we could get into the birth registration document in 20 CFRs, section 422.103, and read how that works. But really what's important is the Spirit of Christ in your day-to-day activities. And I'm just showing you how the history works, and how it has worked for you, and how it has turned society and taken away in a certain direction. And you don't need all that if you were actually coming together in churches like the first century church that took care of all the social welfare of Christians through faith, hope, and charity and the perfect law of liberty. And if you don't do that, you will not be at liberty. But until you are at liberty, may peace be upon your house, and may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.